Come on in. Take your coat off. I'm in the kitchen. This is Abby Norman, and you've been invited to the Bad Dinner Party. Anna Rabe here. Anna is a military wife and an immigrant from Australia who's going to feed us delicious things and make us great cocktails and also explain to us how frustrating the immigration process really is from right in the middle of it. Just a quick programming note, there are some technical difficulties, and I thought about not posting this, but what Anna has to say is too good. So stick with me, it'll get better. This was my first try at the Skype interview. Thanks so much. Here is Anna.
Okay.
So if you're hosting a dinner party or if you're bringing your food to my dinner party, what are we eating?
Well, see, if I'm having a really busy week, it's going to be probably roast lamb and vegetables.
Oh.
Like roast vegetables. And
yum.
Steam the vegetables first and then roast them. That's my trick. And if you really want super crispy potatoes, you got to add a little like duck or goose fat to it.
Ooh.
Not healthy, but really delicious.
Delicious.
And I always make my gravy like from the juices.
Okay.
So we actually had this for dinner last night.
So you steam your vegetables.
Yeah, that's the trick to getting them really crispy. You have to steam them, not all the way through. They can't be, like, completely done. But if you steam them most of the way through and then put them in the oven at a higher heat with a little bit of fat, then they get really crispy.
See, this is a good idea. This is a good idea. Okay.
That's the roast.
All right, so we're having roast lamb and vegetables. Which is totally delicious. And we're going to steam the vegetables so that they're crispy. And of course you add fat.
And honestly, I mean, you can eat this meat on like low temperature, like 180 degrees.
Right.
So I usually do that for about the first hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
But that's great because when you get home from work or you get home from picking, you can put it in.
Mm-hmm.
Last night I marinated it first, but usually I just do salt and pepper and a little bit of like herbage, so maybe some rosemary or some, and then I put a bit of like whole garlic and chop up some onions so they get all like nice and soft.
Nice. Yes.
And then just put like I call it like alfoil, but you know, whatever. Foil
right
over the top of it. Or aluminium foil, not aluminum.
All right.
Put it over the top and let that kind of go for about an hour and a half, and then I turn up the temperature.
Oh.
And then I take the foil off to make it kind of nice and, like, crusty on the outside.
Yum.
But then it's still, like, we like our meat relatively rare, but when you have a dinner party, you kind of want to make it medium rare to medium, right? Because not everybody is into, like, meat that's still talking to you.
Right.
If they're into meat at all.
Right.
So,
yes.
Yeah.
That sounds
still... I don't know. But it's, like, super easy if you have kids. Like,
that's what I was...
I used to make dinner for 3 nights a week growing up, and it wasn't because she was fancy, it was because she had 4 children.
Yeah.
But she went, throw it in the oven for a couple of hours, and we have dinner.
Right, I was thinking, oh, this is perfect, because you could, like, start it, and then you could clean the house.
Oh, yeah, I like, you know what, you know how I know if someone is my friend? If I don't need to clean the house before they come.
Yes, but maybe this is because, like, my kids have not been home. Or they've not been in school for like 4 days, and they literally dragged every single thing they own into the living room. So when I say clean up the house, I mean like that they need to put their mattress back in their bedroom. I don't mean I'm
this
not
is
like
where I admit I don't have children. I
yeah
have a lot of nieces. I have 5 nieces, but I don't have any children.
We're not.
I know, it's crazy.
Yeah. We're not.
I love my friends' kids, though.
Yeah.
To the point where, like, they can bring their kids over for a dinner party
right
and put them to sleep in the guest bedroom upstairs.
Yes.
Like,
yeah, we're not scrubbing anything, but there needs to line to walk from the entryway to the table. So I feel like, oh, this is manageable. Okay, so we're doing that, and we're doing.
So I have to tell you that I have a friend here locally, who Amanda, who does amazing dinner parties, and I'm going to give her a shout out because she's kind of a dinner party queen locally. She's very good. I go over and help her cook. Mm-hmm. In fact, some of my best friendships are the ones where we like stand in the kitchen and
yes.
do the chopping and cooking. I am totally that girl, right? But I'm a celiac, so if you come into my house, I'm going to be cooking for you because it's really better for everybody if I don't get sick.
Right.
So, Amanda will make me gluten-free bread mm-hmm. rolls, and you will love that. But she's really interesting because she has managed to convince her husband, love her to bits, that she needs a 14-seat dining table. So she has a 14-seat dining table in her house, and she routinely fills this with random people. Which, you know, I love the fact that I live close enough to her that I can walk home at the end of the evening. That's
right.
My other tip. Make friends with your neighbors so you don't actually have to drive. Like, nobody, there is no designated driver necessary.
Right. If just everyone lives in the neighborhood.
Works really well.
That's a really good idea. Yeah. Okay, so we're having roast lamb, which sounds delicious. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. we're having, what are we drinking?
So for a pre-dinner cocktail, because this is how we roll.
Okay.
My husband is very into cocktails. For a pre-dinner cocktail, he has suggested, and it's definitely like a whole dinner deal with the drinks. But the pre-dinner cocktail would be a version of a Manhattan.
Okay.
So he pours it into like a coupe glass, which is like a really old school, like they used to in the 40s, those as champagne glasses.
Mm-hmm.
Now they use the kind of old school cocktails. So we have a few of those. So that's what he pours it into. And he adds a brandy cherry.
Yum.
I brandy the cherry. Really like good wine. So depending on the lamb, we have a few really fun favorite bottles of wine. But we love it when our dinner party guests bring wine.
Yes.
We like that a lot. And then usually after dinner, he's going to make either a Moscow Mule.
I love
or a
those.
Mule-shell mule. The Mule-shell mule is my invention.
Okay.
So Moscow mule just has vodka, ginger beer, and like lime juice in it.
Yes.
My version, Mule-shell. Mule-shell is this tiny little town on the border of Texas and New Mexico.
Okay.
And we used to live really close to there. So Mule-shell mule just substitutes the vodka for gin.
Ooh. Oh,
dessert. My husband makes this orange cake. It's a Middle Eastern orange cake.
Mm-hmm. Yum. That would go good with the gin in the Moscow Mule.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So we're eating, we're drinking, and then what often comes up that gets kind of antsy? That maybe has come up very recently because of the DACA rulings. Why would,
you know, as an immigrant?
Yes.
But I'm not talking about immigrants like you.
Right.
And then on. Yeah.
Because so people will say like, oh, immigrants, they don't belong here, and you're there, and it's pretty clear that you were not raised in the States. Like, I'm not a genius, but I feel like you should be able to pick that up.
I know. I mean, I own my health, right?
Right. So do you get a lot of that? A lot of like, oh, you know what I mean?
You know, in my close personal circle, no. Because I don't think those people survive.
Right.
Close to me, but yeah, I have that a lot, and I think it's one of those things where my husband hears that and goes, yeah, because it's, you know, I will say to them, well, hang on a second, who do you mean?
Yes.
I kind of call it out a little, which
that is my favorite.
That's not good at a dinner party. People don't find that very comfortable.
That is my favorite line. That just acting dumb and being like, no, what do you mean? I don't know what you're talking about.
So why don't you? And the other one is, so why don't you mean me? Because I am an immigrant. And
oh.
I'm like, open about that. Why don't you mean me? Why aren't you talking about me?
Right. Because why am I different?
You know what? Can you hear that noise in the background?
A little bit, yeah. But it's okay.
Okay, so I'm going to say the very, like, very American thing to say. That is the sound of freedom. That's actually the sound of a jet engine, a fighter jet in the background.
See, so you're definitely the right kind of immigrant if you say that.
I'll say it. Whether I mean it, it's a whole different story. But yeah, sort of, and I think that's the other complicated part, right? So I have these conversations a lot of the time with people who, for whom service is a very real reality. So, right. You know, a lot of people in America want to talk about how great the military is. They'll say over and over again, like, you know, we're so appreciative of what the military do for us. But the bottom line is there is a, do you know that 8% of currently active duty service members in the military were not born in the U.S.? 8%. Sorry, not even not born in the U.S. are non-U.S. citizens right now. 8%.
That's a lot.
8%. Yes. Now, the majority of them are in the Navy. So it kind of goes like there's an order for like how many are in what service. But the Navy has the most non-U.S. citizen service members right now. You know, that's a lot of people, 8%. And so when they kind of, the people start talking about how much they love the military, I get a little antsy about that too, because not because I don't believe them, but then when we start talking about immigration and especially even things like DACA, there are a lot of currently active duty and reservist and National Guard members who are DACA recipients who are non-US citizens. And so sitting, and then you have people like me who are spouses of someone serving. Who are in this? I feel like there's a lot of double standards. We're military as long as they are what we want them to be. We don't want them to be someone who is transgender. We don't want them to be someone who is gay. We don't want them to be someone who is born in another country. Oh, and by the way, we also probably don't want them to be someone who, like, you know, looks different, sounds different, and speaks a different language.
Unless they learn the other language for us, then we totally want them to speak another language.
Yeah, so there's this that a lot of people don't know about that has this really crazy acronym. It's called MEN. Now, when you had the last Olympics, you saw a few U.S. Army guys competed for the USA and won medals, right? Some of those guys are Kenyan-born. And they're serving in the U.S. Army as part of this MANV program. Now, people bring that up because they're a great example of someone with a specialist skills that is obviously really talented in a specific area, and they've been able to join the military as a consequence. Well, a lot of those MANV soldiers, sailors, and airmen, they get recruited into that program because they maybe speak a language that it is impossible for the U.S. military to teach someone. Right? So it's like cheaper and easier to say, okay, come join us because you already know this language that we need, or you already have this skill that we desperately need. And as of 2 weeks ago, that program has almost gone away. Unless they are already active duty, if they are currently reservists or they're waiting for recruitment, the memo that, I mean, I read a lot of like crazy regulations and memos to figure this stuff out, but it's like the rules keep changing all the time. And I think that I am good, but people don't like it. The rules keep changing. So even right now, I'm in the process of another petition I submitted about 12 months ago. It's to what they call remove the conditions of my green card. So there's this misconception that when you get a green card, you just get it for 10 years. Well, that's not true. So if you are getting a green card on the basis of marriage, you get it for less than 2 years the first time around. And then you have to apply, and it costs about another $1,000, and it takes this process to get the conditions removed off your green card so that then it lasts 10 years. And now, I get that, right? They're trying to stop green card marriages and all the rest of it. They're trying to stop people being, like, dodgy, as I would say.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is, 2 years ago, that process used to take 3 months. I'm in the middle of that process now, and we're at 12 months, which means I have an expired green card, and the letter that they sent me a year ago to say, we're going to extend your green card for a year until we thought, like, till we look at your petition, in less than 2 weeks. So I have an expired green card, an almost expired letter, and my Australian passport. And so in 2 weeks, I'm out of status. I'm technically going to be an illegal immigrant. Even though I've done everything right, I've paid close to $5,000 at this What do you do about that? Because there are so many people in my position, it's now taking well over 12 months. So there are so many people in my position that everyone's trying to make appointments at the immigration offices to get this stamp that I'm going to need to get in my passport to say, yes, you are still legally allowed to be here. But they only release 2 weeks of those appointments at a time. It's taken me, like, every day for 6 weeks I've been checking to try and get one of those appointments, because you also can't get those appointments too early. If you try and get an appointment more than 2 months out before you're, like, needed, they won't give it to you.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's this whole thing. And it's just you, it's just been a really, like, I lost it the other day. I was like, I would not have been, you were dealing with Irma. I was dealing with, like, I wanted to yell at people.
I feel like.
I was
like,
feeling bad at people. Irma, it was just not fun.
I feel like you had it worse. This is crazy.
I have no, worse, better, it's all the same.
I didn't even lose electricity. Yeah. It's just I got stuck with my kids. So I definitely am just whining. That's for sure.
But yeah. So hopefully I'll get that stamp. But right now I'm like, I haven't been home to Australia in 2.5 years.
So when people say.
The last time I was home for my grandfather's funeral.
So when people say things to you like, well, they just need to get in line. Like, do you want.
What line do they mean?
You're like, so.
I mean, there's like. Okay, so have you ever seen a group of Americans try to form a line?
It's not.
They're really bad at it, right? It just doesn't exist. And I was thinking about this the other day, because that's really a good analogy for what it's like. There is no line. So on one hand, you have the people who are yelling the loudest, who get heard, and those are the people who can pay more money, because mm-hmm. the bottom line is, if you're someone who's got a sponsor who's applying for a work visa, and they pay a lot of money, or they have a huge amount in investments, well, they can get expedited, right? The process I'm going through is a that there's no cap. So certain types of immigration, there's a cap on how many people can come in for a certain time. Well, if you're married to an American, there's no cap. Conceivably, anybody who's married to an American should be able to come in, even if that's like millions of people. But there's this myth of a line. So think about the idea that in order to get in the line, there's a set of doors outside the building mm-hmm. that are locked. And you have to have something to get you inside the building even. And that's the issue with DACA recipients. So I've had multiple people in the last week try to say, oh, well, now that they can just apply. That's why DACA existed, because there was no other way for them to look at citizenship. DACA was supposed to be a path for legal citizenship. Do you have 800,000 people who have given up their personal information? And when I tell you personal information, the things the government knows about me are things not even my own mother knows about me. I had to send them copies of like letters between my husband and I when we were dating and after we got married, when we were having to live apart.
No.
We had to send them photographs. We had to send them affidavits that our friends wrote about. I've had to ask my friends to write letters about our relationship.
Oh my God.
Like, I'm not even kidding. And I love my friends a bit. And one of them actually wrote, like, we've discussed, like, you know, among girlfriends, like, there's a group of three girlfriends. We're all married. So, conversations about things. And so one of my friends is like, yes. And we discussed, basically, we discussed, like, having children and our sex lives. Like, she wrote that the other day. And I was like, I love you, because that is true. But also, the US government now knows that.
Right.
Thank you very much. So, but that's exactly right. Like, ooh. I sent the first petition we did, we sent almost 400 pages worth of data. I had to send them copies of, and I get the need for security. So here's the other thing, right? People say, well, don't you think we need to be secure? Dude, I'm the wife of a U.S. service member. Do you think I want issues to happen? Like, no. You know, because the people who are going overseas, the people who are overseas, they are my husband, my brother-in-law, my friends' husbands, my friends' wives, my whatever, you know? So these are people I desperately care about. I care deeply about security. But this isn't security. This is like, this has gotten crazier in the last year. That's the other thing. So 2 years ago, the process I'm in took 3 months. Now we're at 12 months. The lines seem to get to be changed. So for the previous four administrations, prior to this one, there were some pretty clear accountability targets that the USCIS had. So they would get told, you have to deal with certain kinds of applications within 90 days or 180 days or whatever. Well, when we spoke to them the other day, one lady said to me, oh, well, they're only 3 months behind. And I said to her, 3 months behind what exactly? She goes, well, the California Service Center is only 3 months behind the Vermont one. I said, yeah, but this same process used to take 3 months 2 years ago. Explain me. So it kind of feels a bit like doublespeak. Like it feels a little like Brave New World, 1984. Like we're just going to change all the rules. We're just going to say there's no boundaries anymore and we'll just take as long as we want. And I hope people give up. Like the last few months, more and more, I just don't feel like immigrants are welcome at all. So what happened in Charlottesville? It didn't shock me at all. I wish it shocked me. This idea that you have a group of neo-Nazis, you know, just anti any kind of immigration. It just doesn't feel very welcoming. Like, and it's so funny. I've lived in the U.S. on and off for 10 years, and it has never felt like it feels now.
But it does feel different to you.
Yeah, and I have to tell you, I live in a community that's extremely supportive. Like I was saying that earlier, people think, well, the military is like very behind. Hell no. Strangely, you get a really diverse group of people serving in the military, and you get people who then like live around the world. So you get people who've been exposed to lots of different things, and they're working all the time with people of different backgrounds. And so very often, even on a lot of the issues I mentioned earlier, they're very much like, if someone can do the job, I don't care. Just let them do the job. Like,
right.
Whatever. You know, like, let's just move on. I don't feel like this happens where I'm living. I feel very safe. I feel very supported. But at the same time, you know, I was in the Chicago Art Institute only about a month ago. And there was something really lovely on the wall. And I was feeling really down, and there was this great thing that said, for new citizens of the U.S., it said new immigrants to the U.S., we are offering a free membership for a year to the Art Institute of Chicago. And I turned to the tour guide, she was a member of staff, and I just said to her, I said, you know what, I was really encouraged to see that the Art Institute is offering a free membership to new immigrants. And someone else on the tour who I didn't know, had never met, leans over and says very pointedly, well, of course that only means new citizens. And I thought, okay, number one, I can read. Like, what about me made you think I couldn't read? And number two, what was your point? Like, why are you saying this to me? Like, what are you trying to say? Last few months, I've had a lot of conversations with spouses and family members of U.S. service members. Okay, so the U.S. service member is a citizen, but they are married to someone who's an undocumented immigrant.
Right.
And when you hear their stories, those are the ones. Like, they all break my heart, but those are the ones where I come. I want to shake that. Really? Like, you think this is only happening to somehow people who are, you know, are intrinsically, bad. Like, really? It could just as easily.
So tell me about, do you have a good awkward exit story? Have you had to just, like, leave?
Oh,
or have you just, have you gotten the look? I get the look from my husband.
No, I give him the look. he is such a sweet person, like so much nicer than I am. I'm just not as nice as he is.
I also am married
and
to someone who's nicer than me.
Sometimes he does look at me like, what are you doing? But okay, so somebody got on the topic of the Second Amendment.
Okay.
Now, we haven't mentioned this, Abby, but I'm an attorney, so I practice law here in the U.S.,
right.
But I am an attorney. So when people start talking about the U.S. Constitution, like, I've read it. I've studied it.
You're like, game on!
Like, you know, a foreign document.
I got this.
Yeah, let's have this conversation. But someone wanted to talk to me about the Second Amendment. And I was trying to be reasonable. And my opinion about it is not, I'm not an absolutist in saying, hey, that Second Amendment does not guarantee anyone the right to a weapon or whatever. It just, I have some nuances that I like to think about it. Well, one person started to try to tell me how the Australian law was developed. Oh. But they're not Australian. They've never been to Australia. And I'm like, I lived that. Not only did I live the changes to automatic weapons in Australia, I was in the Australian Army when some of those changes were happening.
Oh, no.
So I've seen the videos. So there's a video. There's a video of the last massacre that took place in Australia. And I know this sounds really morbid, mm-hmm. but the video, there was a video that was taken by the crime scene investigators, and it was shared with military and law enforcement as a learning tool. And it was really to shoot the human body. And that's very somber and very sober. But this guy was like coming after me about why he thought Australia implemented the semi-automatic bans that we did. Mm-hmm. Now, I have to tell you, we have not had a massacre like that with a semi-automatic weapon
since the ban.
We instituted those laws. That's right. And it was getting a little heated. And so I finally just kind of looked at my husband like, I got to get out of here. Like this is not going to go anywhere good. And this, you know, this young guy's a guy that my husband was kind of working with. And I thought, okay, let's just get out of here before he like blows up. And so I just kind of basically went to the bathroom and then just kind of went. Like the bathroom was at the side of the house. I like went to the bathroom and then like ducked out the garage door and sent my husband a text message and went like, peace out, I'm going home.
That is awesome.
And sent my friend, yeah. And sent my friend who was the host, I sent her a text message and said, didn't want to like make this any worse than it was. Like, I'm really, you know, like I've gone home, but it's not you. Like,
right.
She just wrote back to me and went, completely understand and actually.
This has been the Bad Dinner Party podcast with guest Anna Rabe, who was awesome and perfected my dinner party instead of making it terrible. I'm Abby Norman. You can find me on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram at Abby Norman Says. You can check out past episodes at baddinnerpartypodcast.com or see what I've been writing lately on my blog at abbynorman.net. If you have ever ruined a dinner party, please come to baddinnerparty.com.